Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark McHugh. I'm your host. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking to Steve Byrne, who is he's the creator and writer of TBS's hit show Sullivan and Son. I shouldn't correct that on the description. There's only one son. he's actually performing over at the Hard Rock coming up starting tonight. It's going to be great to be able to talk to him a little bit about, you know, first of all, his successes as being a writer and creator of the show on TBS, and also a little bit about his comedy and working his way up as well. So it'll be interesting, and there's some interesting things that are going on in his life that we'll be able to talk to a little bit about as well. This is actually the first show of the new year. I was hoping to do an Elvis show this past Monday, but I wasn't able to secure a guest, but we'll see what we can do a little bit later on this month, maybe. We've got quite a few episodes already getting ready to get booked. We should be pretty much solid for the rest of the month, and then come February, we'll start to really kind of dig our heels in and try to do these more often as well. Go to VegasPodcasting.com. You'll be able to check out a lot of the stuff that we have on there. I know there's a couple I haven't put up there yet. I will get to that hopefully this weekend. So this is a special edition of the episode as well. So it'll be interesting to be able to, you know, get back into the groove of things, as it were, as we continue 2015. It's been quite a while. We're one of the longest-running shows here on Blog Talk Radio. We were there, I think, 1 year after Blog Talk started. So quite a few people have dropped off the network to pursue other interests, or simply because they didn't have time to be able to update their shows or whatever. We're one of the longest running. I think Olivia Wilder's show is a month older than ours, and she's been running her show pretty frequently as well. So I'll be able to see that as well. I'm going to go ahead and play some music, and hopefully when I get back, we'll be talking to Steve Byrne, comedian and creator of Sullivan Sons.
I feel like we're two souls scattered on the wind, together for a moment, and carried away again. Every time you leave my side, I stumble in shades of blue, and the only thing I think about is getting back to you. I wanna be about is wishing
That was Josie Milner with Not Pretty. Before that was Western Avenue, Wherever You Are. Wherever Steve is, I believe he's over at the Hard Rock right now. I just saw a picture he took about an hour ago at the Hard Rock. Obviously, he's plastered on the front of the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino here in Vegas to promote his show. He's going to be over at the Vinyl Lounge come starting tonight and tomorrow. He's a regular. He comes here regularly and often. It'll be interesting to be able to see his comedy tonight and tomorrow. So definitely check that out if you haven't gotten tickets yet over at the Hard Rock Casino here in town. Not to be confused with the Hard Rock that is on the Strip, which is a different venue. There are two Hard Rocks, just to let everybody know. So, it'll be an interesting couple months. I'll let you know that on Monday we'll be back at our regular time. We're going to have Kim from Spadaro Fine Fragrances. She's going to be talking a little bit about her company and a kind of an interesting story behind how she started her company. And we're going to have her on the show coming up on Monday. Hopefully in the next coming weeks I can tell you who all is going to be here. I think there's a dating website I'm really interested in getting to talk to CEO about, something that I wanted to do. It's a website that not only asks you about what's good about yourself, why people should date you, but also reasons that you shouldn't. Reasons, things that aren't perfect, obviously. So if you're not perfect, then this website's definitely for you. I'm going to totally talk to the creators of that as well. I need to find out what the website's called, though. Let me look at it real quick. I can find it for you guys. I really want to, I really wanted to get these guys in and talk a little bit about that as well. So that's coming up in the coming weeks. Let's see if we can find it. We tweeted it the other day. Let's take a look here. Give me 1 second. I'll find that information for you while we're waiting for Steve Byrne to come on the show. Like I said, he's doing his comedy coming up over at the Hard Rock. And Sullivan and Sons has been renewed for a new season. That's coming up this summer. And I'll have to ask him if he's in the middle of filming those or have they filmed them yet. Let's see here. The website. Production. Stupid ad for girls. Trying to find where in the hell they have that. Let's see if we can find the website here. Because I really, guys, want to settle for love. There it is. Settleforlove.com. We're probably going to try to get one of the CEOs of the company on with us coming up on the show. Also, there's an actor that I'm going to get on who's just landed a role. Let's see if we can find that. Let's see, is there my promotions? Drew Stevenson, who's going to be a part of the Vampire Diaries, his hip show on CW. I'm probably going to try to get him on the show by the end of the month as well. So there's two guests that we're going to have, three guests that we're going to have for the next couple of weeks. So definitely check that out. Go to VegasPodcasting.com. I'm going to start updating that site a little bit more often. A lot of my archives on the front page of Blog Talk has vanished, and I don't know why exactly that is, possibly because I have one of the freer accounts. And if I have that kind of account, I might not have those things as well. But we'll see what goes on with those archives, and but I'll update, make sure to update VegasPodcasting.com a lot more often now that that's a situation. We're waiting for Steve to give us a call in. I'm going to give him another 5 minutes. I'm currently in the middle of talking with his publicist to be able to get to him, and his publicist is trying to get a hold of him to be able to call on the show. So I'm vamping a little bit. But anyway, Like I said, big 2015. We've been doing the show, for those of you who are new listeners, or for those people that have, you know, don't know the story. We started the show back in, I believe, 2007. And like I said, we're one of the first, you know, we're one of the first year shows that are still around, in terms of Blog Talk Radio. There's only a few of us that have stayed the course with this network. Olivia Wilder, like I said, shout out to my friend Olivia, who has a really great show on her network. Also Sean Daly, who is one of the originators, on this network, is still alive and kicking on this network. And Sean's done a great job of his shows, as well. There's quite a few new people that are out there as well, so it's going to be absolutely great to be able to hear with them as well. With that in mind, we have a very funny comedian who's going to be at the Vinyl Lounge coming up over at the Hard Rock. Steve Byrne is on with us right now. How are you doing, Steve?
Good, good. I apologize for being late. I really am sorry. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. You look like you were looking at the interesting culture down at the Hard Rock, according to your Facebook. so,
yeah. When you see that, there's no coffee needed. I am awake.
Yeah. Now, I mean, you just got into town today, didn't you?
I actually got in late last night. I took the last flight out of LA and came in, and I love coming in here. I mean, I truly love. Were you born and bred Vegas?
I'm not born and bred Vegas, sorry to say, but I've lived here enough to be a local, I guess, if we consider.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I lived here, like, you know, I did this show years ago called The Real Wedding Crashers, which was like Punks meets Weddings, that Ashton Kutcher did for NBC years ago, and so I lived here for like 3 months, and then another run, I used to do Beecher's Madhouse all the time when it was at the Hard Rock, and so I spent a lot of time out here. I absolutely love the city. It's so fun, and you know, because people think Vegas is always the Strip, but when you get to go off in the burbs and stuff, it's still pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, us locals, we don't hit the Strip unless we have, like, you know, friends or family that want to go out to the Strip. We're usually out, on the suburban, you know, realms, going to the station casinos and hanging out there. So it's
yeah, this is like this is Times Square for you guys, right?
Yeah, basically. the Strip is Times Square. Then you know, anything off of it, I mean, there's these little places. I know there's a British place that's off of, I'm trying to think, it's off of Mingo, I believe. That it's a really good place to hang out too. There are some like little nice little places. If you go off Strip, there are some really nice little places that you guys can go that you'll get a different flavor of what Vegas has to offer. And if there's an opportunity to be kind of diverse in this market,
you're talking,
and I'm
like
pretty
local
sure you're bringing
eateries that are specific just to Vegas, like an Applebee's, which you can't find anywhere else, or I got you, like an Olive Garden. I know what you're driving at.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not like they don't have any Korean restaurants out here or any Japanese restaurants or Brazilian restaurants or anything like that.
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, for you, I mean, just being out here and doing comedy in front of Vegas crowds out here, I mean, I hear from a lot of comedians that they absolutely love it because it is kind of a cross-section of the U.S. It's not, you know, L.A. has a certain type of crowd and New York has a certain type of crowd, but this seems to be like the, you know, the mosh of everything. What's it like for you to be able to be in front of a crowd here in Vegas?
Well, what I love about Vegas is it's one of the, like, selfishly speaking, I agree with everything you're saying, by the way. It is a cross-section. It's a hybrid, a little bit of people from everywhere that just end up, you know, at a show. Because let's be honest with each other. People, they make, like, a Cirque show a destination, and if you aren't going to a Cirque show, you end up at, like, my show. You know what I mean? It's just like, we didn't plan on this, but we were on Groupon. This works out. Let's go see Steve Byrne. But for me, selfishly, I really enjoyed performing in Vegas because it's one of, I think, only Vegas and New York City where you feel like you're part of the city. There's, like, an energy with all the entertainment that's going on. There's almost like this boost of morale as an entertainer when you're performing in a city like this. You get in trance with the neon, with all the different shows, the showgirls, the drinking, the nightlife. It, for me, there's nothing like performing in Vegas.
Now, you know, translating that, I mean, you obviously, you know, you created Sullivan and Son, and having to write and create that kind of energy in front of, you know, in front of a TV camera, and to be able to do that. How is that for you to kind of, you know, get into the mindset of writing for a TV show and kind of keeping that energy from the stand-up to television?
You know, it's kind of daunting. It's one of those things where, you know, when something happens to you and you dream of it happening and all of a sudden it happens, you're like, oh, gosh, I got to do the work now. Because I think every comic, when you start off, you think, oh, I'd love to have a sitcom. I'd love to have my own show. And then when you create and write something and then all of a sudden they buy it, it's like, okay, now you got to do it. It was a little scary because I'm very inexperienced in that world. I'd never been on a sitcom even as a guest star. So for me, it was really exciting. It was a trial by fire. I just got thrown in the deep end. And not only that, but you're in charge of everything too, which is crazy. When you're a creator, you know, a lot of people come to you for answers, and not having any experience whatsoever, all of a sudden you have to have the answers. So, you know, you just hope to do the best job you can. I mean, for example, when we were auditioning and casting the roles of the series, I'm somebody who auditioned all the time and never got cast in anything. So now all of a sudden I'm a producer and I'm sitting in a chair and I'm watching people audition. They're like, what do you think? I'm like, what do I think? I think that you don't even know if I can do this because no one's auditioned me. So I'm the last person that should be judging these other people. But again, that's what happens when you get put in charge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have some really talented actors on the show as well. I mean, does that help out in the fact that maybe some of these actors have maybe just a little bit more experience than you do?
Oh, completely. I mean, that's all done by design. You know, when you're creating or writing something, I knew from the get-go I was not as experienced. So all the characters that were in the show were reflections of my stand-up. Carol was the sexual aspect of my stand-up. Hank was the racial aspect of my stand-up. The guys were the Greek chorus in terms of just speaking as a guy in terms of your view of the world. That was that voice. And then talking about my family, I actually had my family there. So anything that I could derive out of my stand-up when I was talking about my parents, I could literally implement into the mouth of Jody Long or the voice of Dan Loria. So I was always more of a facilitator, a straight man to all the craziness that was going on. I thought that's the easier route to go because I'm not as experienced as an actor, so I wouldn't be able to pull off a lot of things. So why not just hand it off to some real professionals? And slowly over time, over the course of 3 seasons, I felt like I got better. I worked harder at it, but it's still pales in comparison to the experience of Brian Doyle Murray, who wrote Caddyshack and has been in every SNL movie, and Dan Loria on The Wonder Years, et cetera, you know?
Yeah, you know, and I think that those were actually pretty perfect castings for those, actually, as well. I mean, Brian Doyle Murray doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. He's a hilarious talent, and people kind of don't recognize that he's been in so many great movies. I know a lot of them have kind of been overshadowed by his brother, but Brian does a really good job, and you're right, Dan has done so much great as well. He's such a serious actor, but you know, seeing that translation over to comedy is absolutely great as well. So it's a solid cast.
Brian lives under a big shadow of Bill, but you know, people don't know that Brian's the one that started at Second City and is the one that got Bill into it. So if it wasn't for Brian, we wouldn't know Bill Murray at all. And Brian was such a great voice early on that he wrote a lot of material up front that was kind of standards in Second City. He's you know, one of the founding architects and the foundation of Second City. He's referenced all the time in those books, or anybody who does a biography that came out of Second City, they usually mention Brian Doyle Murray. I just read Martin Short's book that just came out recently, and he referred to Brian Doyle Murray quite a bit too. So it's kind of cool to see that, but then to get to know that I was fortunate enough to get to work with the guy, it's still mind-blowing to me that I had that blessing for 3 summers.
Well, having had that experience where you've been, you know, that you've been on certain shows like The Real Wedding Crashers and Chappelle and, you know, some of these others where you kind of had to improv a little bit, you know, in terms of your comedy, did that help you out a little bit with the show as well?
Yeah, but I think ultimately, you know, when you have, you know, Vince Vaughn as your executive producer, Peter Billingsley as an EP, and then Rob Long, who did Cheers the last 8 years and, you know, worked with Bob Newhart, these are all professionals that are going to take the lead and you're going to go with it. So I had some incredible guys at the forefront of our show that I was able to learn from, and they were very patient with me. But at the end of the day, my stand-up background was more in play when I was in the writer's room in terms of improvising, and especially the day of on the set itself when we're filming. We film in front of a live studio audience, so all the laughs you hear are really earned. I know that you could watch a sitcom and go, you know, it's a laugh track, but we kept going until we found the joke or we found what facilitated the story in terms of the joke, and we just kept at it. And some shoot days were longer than others. Some went 5 hours, but we were always like, we're going to stay here until we get it right. And I think having an improv guy like Vince around, obviously Brian Doyle Murray, myself, the other comics, that made it a lot easier.
Yeah, now, you know, you only wish that you could be able to do that on stage tonight, to be able to stop. Oh, I'm sorry, that didn't really work. We're going to retweak it just a little bit and do it again for you. Were you very surprised about the success of the show? I mean, obviously, we're going to third season right now. You know, was it kind of surprising to you to be able to see that TBS is really kind of behind you and backs you with the show?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, you know, we set out to make a very nostalgic sitcom, something that paid homage to a lot of the sitcoms that I grew up that I really appreciated. And to me, these days, what is so posh or in are these single cam shows. And basically, when you're making a single cam show, it's done primarily by a bunch of chin strokers, you know, a bunch of clever comics or clever writers. And when you sit and watch these shows, you go, oh, that was smart comedy. Usually with smart comedy, you sit back and you appreciate it, but you don't laugh out loud. And that's kind of the opposite of a sitcom. A sitcom is hard laughs, because you got to get that reaction from the live studio audience. So they're two very different art forms, but I think right now there's so few sitcoms out there. When we made the show and when it was on the air, you know, it did really well, and I wasn't surprised by it because we had a great writing staff. We stocked the pond with some really great writers who had some great accolades on their resume. So for me, I wasn't as shocked that we were getting 2 million viewers per episode over the course of the three seasons. What was shocking to me was the lack of acknowledgement from mainstream press, media, talk shows, anything. We got literally no notoriety whatsoever from anybody. But again, that goes back to what is posh, what is in, and what is not. And we never fit that bill, and I never have in my career either. So it's reflective maybe of my career, but I don't care. I got to make something I really appreciated.
Well, I think we're getting to that point where we're seeing these TV shows, you know, these actual situation comedies that are going on right now. I mean, TV Land's found a niche in that as well, and they have some really great, you know, really great situation comedies as well. And I think that genre is coming back after so many years. So I think, you know, once you dig into the trenches a little bit and get to a couple more years, we may see some of those things get accolades. I know Betty White just the other day got a People's Choice Award. So I mean, it's, you know, I think we're starting to see that comeback. You know, of people wanting to a nice little simple 22-minute, you know, situation comedy versus a one cam thing. I think that genre is coming back. So I think you guys were you know, I won't say lucky, but I think you came in right at the right moment when that started happening again. So. I mean, it's great to be able to see that as well. And we're seeing that in other networks too. I think Oprah has a couple of Oprah's network has a couple of situation comedies as well. I believe Tyler Perry has a couple that are out on there too. So, yeah, I mean, it's a genre that's coming back. I mean, very, very strong. So, so it's great to be able to see that as well. Have you guys started filming season three yet, or are you guys going to be doing that?
Season three was filmed. Done. It aired all last summer, and over the course of the last few months, we were waiting to hear our fate. And unfortunately, there was a new president that was hired, and as most new regimes have had in the past on any network, they usually kind of cut the cord on a lot of shows and want to start from a clean slate. And unfortunately for us, that is what happened with us. So, you know, I don't have any sour grapes, because if it wasn't for TBS, we wouldn't have had three great years. with Steve Coonan and Michael Wright taking us on and believing in our show, and we got to do it. So right now, you know, I have a few more irons in the fire, and we've been working on some other projects, so we're going to go out and pitch these, and we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm interested because right now, I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, there's a lot of times when some shows get canceled and they're very, very popular that they'll seek other outlets, you know, Netflix or maybe go to another network. Was that is that something you guys may have considered, or is that, you know, has the run of Sullivan and Son kind of went its course?
Yeah, I think when it happened, you know, all of us thought, you know, maybe it had run its course. The only thing I would really, you know, for me, the cast and crew was the best part about going to work. We really had a blast. We all love each other. You know, on New Year's, on Christmas, we all texted each other. We're actually meeting together in a month from now to all get together and have a dinner. Like, we genuinely cared about each other. Every guest star we had would come by and say, you know, it's never like this. You guys have something special here. So when, like, Ted McGinley tells you that, who was on Married with Children and Happy Days and all these sitcoms, I mean, he's a veteran, you know. He's done everything,
yeah.
And he's always guest stars and everything. And he said, hey, you know, you got a really good thing here. It's just like that means a lot to me, and I made sure to appreciate that every day I was on the set. And I think everybody did because we all knew we had something special there. So to me, that's the only thing I'll really miss. I'll miss the people. I'll miss the work. I'll miss the show. I'll miss the scripts. But I think how we ended it, you know, at the end of season 3 was a nice kind of way to go out. I wish we had more road. We had more stories to tell. But unfortunately, that's not in the cards for us, you know.
Well, I mean, I look forward. I mean, obviously, having a hit show that had 3 seasons, you know, I think that it says a lot on your resume in terms of being a, you know, writer and all that as well. So hopefully that does give you a little bit. But when you said Ted McGinley, I had to cringe a little bit. I'm not exactly sure if you're familiar with the Ted McGinley curse. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I have heard the curse, yeah. But, you know, when you think about, you know, like, you know, Charles Shaughnessy, who did The Nanny, to, you know, Will Sasso, to, I mean, it just, we had so many great guest stars, and they all would always compliment the camaraderie and the chemistry on the set. So Ted McGinley, I was just thinking because you think about the fact that he was on Happy Days, he was on Married with Children, and on top of all the guest starring roles he's done, he's been on so many sitcoms. I mean, the guy's got a stacked resume, and when he pulls you aside and says, hey, this is kind of cool, it's like, oh, that's somebody you should listen to, because it's easy for us to go, oh, he was this guy, but when you look at the resume, it's like, oh, yeah, he's done a ton of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
you know, no, nothing against Ted. I mean, he's a great actor. His resume, you're right, it's just very, very long. It's just, I was kind of had to cringe a little bit just because there's a curse. There's a, you know, if you guys don't know, look it up.
He's the killer, yeah.
Yeah, but but like I said, there's so many other projects that I think that you, I'm interested to see what you come up with next, because obviously, like I said, this was a hit show and all that as well, and I'm interested to see kind of where this kind of goes from now. Now, you know, you're back on the road. I believe you're going to be doing more comedy. You'll be doing a huge tour this summer, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm touring right now. I'm getting ready to film a 4th-hour special in a few months now, so... You know, that's why hitting the road is great right now, because it's just me and the microphone and notebook and trying to see what works, what doesn't work, and trying to get it all, chisel the fat on it and get something done, you know, probably by July, August. So I'm ready to film it in September, October. And that's why, you know, I'm excited to be here at the Hard Rock, because, you know, it's always great to be back in Vegas, but it's great to take all these new jokes out there and see if people like them or not.
Any pressure for you to you know, obviously come up with new material for this this new special? And with that in mind, I mean, was there a lot of material that you've kind of compiled that you've been kind of waiting on to be able to do a special like this?
I think the fun of it, you know, look, creating a new hour is always the scariest thing in the world, because you got to start from zero. And if you make that commitment to yourself, you just scrap the greatest hits, you scrap anything old, and you literally just start from scratch. And that, to me, is the toughest, scariest thing. But the great thing in the last 3 years of working on Sullivan & Son is I toured with the other guys on the show, Ahmed Ahmed, Owen Benjamin, Roy Wood Jr. And those guys all inspired me to up my game while we were on the road with each other to become better comics. We all made each other better comics. And there was different ways of looking at jokes through Roy's perception or Owen's or Ahmed's. And I think all those guys rubbed off on me in a way that made me a better comic. So I think the stuff I'm coming up with now is a lot more personal. It's not as just kind of like goofy and observational. Now it's a lot more personal, and it's stuff I'm a lot more proud of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of getting into that groove again and kind of going that as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to be able to, you know, to be able to be there. I mean, any place where are you guys? Do you know where you're taping the special at? Are you doing it in L.A.?
I'm not sure. The first one I did in L.A., actually the first two I did in L.A., and then the last one I did in New York City. And I'm thinking I had such a good time in New York, maybe going back and doing one more in New York. Because when all said and done, you know, a comic, I think, should look at his career as a rock band, you know? You have so many albums, and on each album, maybe you have one or two hits. And over the course of, hopefully for me, seven or eight specials, I'll have some, you know, I'll have 10 signature bits that people could look back on and go, oh, that was, I really like that bit. So, you know, over the course of 1 hour, maybe you'll have two hit singles off your album that people will remember from that album. So that's always the job for me, is to keep creating all these hours, and hopefully that's where I land, you know?
Yeah, now, obviously the store is helping you out because, you know, you can try some of these jokes out and tweak them and shape them to the way that you want as well. I mean, that's the art of a comedian, to be able to do that as well. You know, how has it been for you to you know, test out some of these some of this material? And I believe the way that most comedians have told me is that they'll usually put it right in the middle, where they'll start to put some of these new jokes in and kind of shape them and tweak them and make sure that they go over well. Is that kind of the same situation with you?
You know, I think so for the most part, yeah. I mean, for me this last time especially, I just started from zero, and I just went up with the notepad and just started coming up with everything I'd written. I just started spewing, and hopefully it stuck. So now I don't necessarily put it in the middle. If there's a joke that applies towards my wife, or a joke that applies towards my daughter, or a joke that applies towards my view on religion or faith, sometimes you can watch a comic and all the material is jumbled all over the place. But if you just categorize them all together and put them together, then you'll find the placement of the joke. You know, usually you put the weaker one up top, and you'll close with a stronger one in whatever section you're doing. So I like to open off a little softer, I guess. Maybe sometimes you get a sucker punch in with a good joke. But I always think the show should slowly build towards a nice end. So I think they don't necessarily remember how you start, it's how you finish. So I like to jam everything towards the end, the stronger stuff, and go from there.
Yeah, a lot of earlier comics are very, very into, you know, just telling, you know, just jokes. But then you start getting into the fact that you get a bit, then a set, and, you know, kind of working your way through it that way as well. And that's a kind of a learning curve that everybody needs to go through. Speaking of which,
yeah.
another learning curve. I mean, have you ever bombed, and have you learned from that experience?
Oh, bombing is absolutely part of the gig. I mean, if you ask me if I bombed, I probably bombed last week. I probably bombed a few days ago. I mean, especially when you're starting to write a new hour, you got to understand you're going to take it on the chin. And for every 10 jokes you write, one of them is going to be great. And 9 of them are going to suck. So you just have to accept that and know that bombing is part of it. A lot of young comics think a comic is a headliner, or, you know, headlining isn't doing 45 minutes. Headlining is selling tickets. For me, what is the mark of a true comic is when you can go up there, tell a joke, it bombs, it flatlines, you have nothing, and you're not uncomfortable at all. You can hold your hand out. It doesn't shake at all. You got to be professional. You got to be better than the room and just know, look, that didn't go well. I'll get you back on the next one. And if I don't get you back on the next one, guess what? I'll be back here tomorrow night. I'll have a better night. It's just, that's part of the gig. Some nights aren't going to go your way. Some jokes aren't going to go your way. But bombing is absolutely integral to the profession of stand-up comedy, because stand-up at the end of the day is rooted in failure. And success is just a graduation of failures. That's all it is. So every time you hear a great joke, there's 9 or 10 that were written that bombed, that enabled you to get to that one joke.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that Rocky quote, the one about, you know, it's not how hard life, you know, pushes you down. It's the ones that you get back up from, basically, and
yeah,
keep moving
yeah.
forward. That's what I was thinking when you're saying that. You know, to be able to have that recovery on stage, I think, is something also that can't be learned off stage. It's got to be something you've learned on stage and experience, and it's nothing
mm-hmm.
that's going to be right away too. So I think that's important for any comedian to know as well. It would be very interesting for you to be over at the Hard Rock. You guys can follow Steve on Twitter at Steve Byrne Live and on Facebook, Steve Byrne, which I'm actually I'm actually liking your fan page. I'm also a friend of yours on Facebook too. So I've been
Ooh.
Following you for quite a while. So
well, thank you.
I look forward. Anything else you need to promote? Anything you want to add?
Not really. No. I mean, just out there trying to do my best and trying to get people to appreciate it. And, you know, I have that new special on Netflix right now, Champion. So if you can't make it out and see me, you can just check it out on Netflix.
Yeah, do so. And I would hope that Hope Eleven and Sons ultimately is brought to maybe Netflix, or even if it's just for the first 3 seasons. Or I don't know if TBS still has it on their website, if they have any old episodes, but definitely check out Sullivan & Sons. It was a hilarious run for you guys to be able to do that show.
Thank you very much.
Very, very talented. So I really look forward to seeing what these other projects are, and best of luck to you, and have fun tonight over at the Hard Rock.
Absolutely. Thanks for spending time with me, and I apologize for my tardiness there today, but I really, anytime you get to do these things, when it goes well, it goes well, and it was really fun talking to you, because sometimes you can do these things and it does drag, and it and it's not as much fun, but you made this an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, no problem at all, Steve. The next time you're in town, definitely we'll get you back on the show.
Absolutely. All right. Take care. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
All right, bye.
Steve Byrne, everybody. You guys check him out at Steve Byrne Live and Steve Byrne on Twitter. That's BYRNE on Facebook and Twitter. So make sure you check that out as well. Be back next week, Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk to you guys then. Go to VegasPodcasting.com, check out some of the archives there, and we'll talk to you guys next week here on Somewhere in Vegas.